gather round. I'm glad everybody came out tonight. As we stand on our neighborhood corner, know that this fire that's burning represents the passion you have. Listen. I recognize all of you. Every creed and color. With that being said,
We had!
Say what?
Now beat that.
Oh, yeah!
Now what we want you all to do is sit back, y'all. And just relax, y'all.
Now, before I finish, let me just say, I did not come here to show out, did not come here to impress you, because to tell you the truth, when I leave here, I'm gone, and I don't care what you think about me, but just remember, when it hits the fan, brother, whether it's next year, 10 years, 20 years from now, you'll never be able to say that these brothers lied to you, Jack.
Okay, I'll reload it.
From the sports bars to the stands, we are the voice of the fans. You are now plugged into your sports mixtape. This is the Section 357 show, where we always have the best seats in the house, and we are presenting to you the Ball Street Journal with your Ball Street Journal reporters, Dee, Trey, Ron, and myself, Floyd. Fellas, how you doing?
Doing absolutely fantastic as always. Really have missed out on the show. Really looking forward to this show. Got a great guest. And in a surprise twist, let me toss it over to my second man, my man T. How you doing?
What is going on, my brothers? Once again, we're gathered here to tackle on sports, love, music, all that great stuff is all combined into one amazing show. Let's get this thing started.
Our main man, Big Shot Ron, is on Players Holiday right now. So you've got me, Trey, and D holding it down. And before we get started, I always like to remind you that you can always find us on Twitter at Section 357. Find us on our blog. Find us on Tumblr. Find us on Stitcher. Find us on iTunes. We're all over the place by doing a simple search for the Section 357 show. With that being said, we're talking hoops, and we're always happy to have a special guest, Mia Hall, basketball aficionado, sports journalist, knower of all things when it comes to hoops. Mia, how you doing?
I'm well. First of all, you know, definitely happy to be back on the show, so thank you for having me.
Well, let's jump right into a basketball conversation. You went to Ghana this past summer, and you had a chance to connect with NBA superstar from the Miami Heat, Chris Bosh. Talk about that experience. Talk about your trip, and give us some perspective on what you learned while you were over there.
All right. So yes, definitely celebrated a big birthday this summer in July. And for my birthday, I wanted to go to Ghana. I wanted to go to Africa for a long time, and I wanted to see the slave castles. So I definitely wanted to go to a country that had slave castles in it. So I wanted to go to, you know, West Africa. And I had a couple of friends that have, you know, told me about Ghana in the past and, you know, just started reading up on the history and, you know, how it was the first, you know, country in Africa to become independent. So I was like, you know, I definitely wanted to go there and just see it for myself, see my people, see, you know, see home, so to say. And so I went, and it was definitely, you know, an experience of a lifetime. Like, I definitely want to go back. And while I was there, surprisingly, like, of course, I'm into sports, so, you know, I had my eyes and ears open for an opportunity to to see their radio station or to see their television station, but I didn't seek it out myself. So I just actually, you know, was speaking to some people when we went out one day, and they were like, yeah, Chris Bosh is in town, and he's doing basketball clinics. I'm like, what? So of course, like, I had to go where he was going to be and meet him. So I did go to the television station while I was down there, and had the opportunity to speak to the host of their weekly NBA show. It's called Fast Break TV on TV3 out there. And then, you know, spoke with Chris Bosh and a couple of other executives from NBA Africa while they were there. So it looks like they were doing a lot of, development work out in Africa, definitely, you know, spreading basketball worldwide. But yeah, so that's what he was doing at the time, going to different parts of Ghana and hosting clinics and things like that. And I got to speak to some coaches out there, and also Coca-Cola, who, you know, Sprite sponsors the show, and Sprite sponsors a lot of basketball leagues and teams out in Ghana as well. So it was just nice to go out there and see what is happening globally in the basketball sphere. So that was good. But historically, I also got to, you know, visit the slave castles and, you know, see the Door of No Return, where I know, you know, somebody in my family came out of it and they, you know, never came back. So I was glad that, you know, I was able to come back. Like, they thought we weren't going to return, but, you know, look, we overcame. So that was interesting.
Actually, Mia, let me flip it up real quick. I mean, while you were in Ghana, what was your take on their other sports outside of the hoops world? I mean, I know we want to focus on a lot of hoops in this interview, but did you get any sense of their fandom for soccer and the World Cup, or did they have any
sports? Oh, for sure.
Yeah?
Oh, for sure.
Expand on that.
So everywhere you go, if there's an open lot, there's kids playing soccer. Like, you know, even in the advertising and, you know, just everything out there, like, of, you know, it's a lot, soccer is a lot bigger out there. And that was even, like, you know, some of, not the frustrations, but some people were talking about that, like how, you know, every kid that grows up there wants to be a soccer player, or if they're into sports, like they're into soccer. So that's why they kind of appreciated, like, somebody bringing and trying to develop, you know, another sport out there. But yeah, soccer is huge. I mean, every time I told somebody I was from the USA, like, oh, you guys stole that game from us, you know, they were definitely not happy about USA beating Ghana. They, you know, don't even know how it happened. Neither do I, probably, but they were definitely, you know, definitely just totally upset with their Black Stars, I guess as they call them. So of course soccer is, like, definitely huge out there. But I did meet, like, some tennis players, not professional tennis, but, you know, it looks like they do light tennis out there. I'm not sure if Barclays has a league, but I know that they had a tennis court that I passed by. So it looks like, you know, it looks like they're into a lot of other sports. Definitely soccer number one, but, you know, I did see some tennis players I didn't see any, like, baseball and stuff like that. I guess that's more American, but yeah, I saw a couple of other sports.
As far as social media's penetration in Africa is involved, is it as important to the people of Ghana as it is to us in the States regarding Twitter and Facebook and Instagramming their opinions and what they feel about sports? And does it take on a different, and if it is as large, does it take on a different voice? Whereas out here, we're kind of more involved into the soap opera of sports.
Mm-hmm.
Who's what and who got injured, who's making what type of money. How is the social media penetration in Ghana as compared to the United States?
I was there for like 10 days. I don't feel, and I hardly had internet. And I think, like, I don't know if that's a factor for some people, because maybe, you know, their phones, you know, work all the time. But for me, like, I couldn't really engage, like, you know, like how I usually do in the States, just because of the lack thereof it. Of course, you know, the people that can, let's just focus on the people that can tweet and, you know, do all their social media. the only conversation that I really got a chance to follow was around Chris Bosh being in Ghana and, like, you know, the station. Like, they had their social media team, and they had, you know, a couple of people posting and, you know, doing that, that doing all of that. So I did see a lot of engagement, and it was I mean, I only got to see the basketball conversation. So, you know, they did have a lot of questions, and, you know, they were actively engaging the fans, or the people that usually watch Fast Break. So I know that they think that it's important. I'm not sure about, like, when, you know, an American basketball player is not in town, if that conversation is still the same. But I did like, look at some of, like, the sports reporters' pages and things like that, and it looks like they engage. They engage people a lot, and they think that, you know, it's important. Just looking at some of their pages and, you know, some of the past conversations and things that they do. So it looks like they think that it's important. I don't know, you know, which aspect. I wasn't able to look that deeply into it, of what, you know, they focus on more. But it definitely looks like, you know, the fans are engaged and look to getting in the conversation online when they can.
Given the fact that you got a chance to meet Chris Bosh and LeBron's offseason decision was the biggest story of the NBA offseason, what were your thoughts on LeBron's change of teams?
At first, I was a little bit surprised, you know, just because, okay, he moved and then he moved back. So I was like, I know that there has to be, like, a bigger reason, you know, for this. And then when I started to see the conversation around, like, you know, he's going to, I mean, I guess I always thought of this, not always thought of it, but it just more so came out when I started seeing stories on, like, how he's going to help Cleveland's economic development. So that's what I really, like, appreciated about the whole, you know, the whole move that, you know, of course this is going to mean something different for the economy, and it's going to mean something different for, you know, community outreach, because that's what I do, you know, all the time. I'm all about community outreach, so it definitely is going to do something, you know, for that community. I mean, Miami, you know, it's basically a dynasty, you know, you could call it that, and he is still going to be a dynasty after LeBron leaves, but, you know, LeBron being able to go back to Cleveland and be able to help, you know, Ohio and, you know, just Cleveland and all the surrounding cities and, you know, parts of Ohio to be able to bring them back to, you know, to a good place, or even just, you know, help them to rise. I mean, didn't they say they sold out of, like, you know, season tickets or something like that in, like, a matter of hours or something like that? I don't know. But, you know, just that he was able to do that there. And Miami is going to be okay. But, you know, like, a place like Cleveland and, you know, the surrounding areas, I'm glad that he went back and, you know, is able to, you know, help it grow and develop in whatever way he can. So I'm happy.
Mia, let me flip this a little bit more locally, both in on basketball and just with what you've been dealing with. But there's been two articles posted recently, one on 538, another big one on Grantland, talking about the decline of New York basketball and just the talent that it brings. You know, you hear a lot as Hall and I are down here in SEC country about how, you know, local athletes, you know, just keep the SEC going. But there's been a lot of talk about the decline of local New York-grown basketball talent. What have you seen in this, and what is the root of this?
Well, I mean, I know that there, you know, is a lot of factors in it. You know, and like they said, you know, the Mecca in decline, like it, you know, was once a place where, you know, at least, you know, every draft or whatever you would see, like, you know, or at least every other draft or something like that, you would see, you know, some big names coming from New York City or that were, you know, originally from New York City. And, you know, I think right now, you know, it definitely has changed. I mean, as, you know, coaches more, you know, focusing on different things and different opportunities. I don't know. I mean, I hope that it goes back to it. You know what I mean? I definitely, you know, hope that in my role that we can impact, you know, the development of basketball players out of New York City, both athletically and educationally so that they can be, you know, eligible to play for colleges and things like that, you know, and meet those kind of requirements. But yeah, I mean, I just hope that it changes. Like right now it's, you know, on the decline, but you know, I'm hoping in some way, shape, or form that, you know, people recognize it and that I can be a part of the shift going in the other direction.
In 1992, the Dream Team was the big deal. Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird going out to represent the good old red, white, and blue. And they brought gold home to us and in a very easy and quick way to establish our U.S. dominance in basketball. Now here we are, and international play doesn't seem to have as much importance to us as it did back in 92. And to make matters even worse, it seems like there have been a couple of owners, Mark Cuban to be specific, that have been really outspoken regarding them risking their franchise by leasing their players out for international play. This particular year, international play, rising star Paul George had a major injury to himself, and he may not never be the same. Is Mark Cuban right for having these type of thoughts of as far as risking their franchise for the good old red, white, and blue, or is international play bigger than the NBA itself?
Right. I think more so the latter. Granted, you know, we, you know, took the title in, won in the Olympics in 2012. And, you know, we have, like, you know, of course, like, the most developed and greatest basketball franchise. I mean, just, you know, based on the Olympics alone, let's say. But, you know, why not engage in international play? Like, I don't think that, you know, USA or the players for USA should just stay in USA. I mean, you can get an injury, you know, during the regular season. And granted, you know, you're with your team, like, you know, you're under their contract, whatever. But, you know, it's just like, I mean, it's going to be a risk anything you do. So I don't think that keeping players, you know, off of international play is going to, you know, lower their risk of injury while they're not on their own, not playing for their own team. But I don't think that that's, you know, that should take us out of the global conversation or the global phenomenon, really, that, you know, that basketball is, like, you know, all other sports are going to continue to compete and their players are going to continue to play other countries. Like, why should we, you know, just because it's a risk, like, why should we take that out of the, why should we take that out of the question? So, no, I don't think the latter.
Last question from me, Mia, just for our listeners out there. Let us know the vibe of what's going on around you right now up there at the Barclays Center or with the Brooklyn Nets basketball team. Give us the vibe on what's going on in your world right now.
Well, we're definitely, I think that, you know, we're focusing on, you know, building up from where, you know, Jason Kidd and, you know, Paul Pierce or whatever, where they left off, you know, where we, you know, lost Sean Livingston and things like that. So now they just have to, you know, get the team, you know, to gel together again and, you know, and be competitive enough to, of course, compete for the coveted championship. But also, I mean, on the, as a whole, like, we're all getting ready for All-Star Weekend. So that's a big focus of everybody's, like, you know, February is going to be, even the months leading up to February, like starting, I mean, it's been started since last February, but, you know, right now, like, it's a big focus on All-Star. So, you know, we have two of the major events and, you know, tons of events we're trying to have surround it. So so that's definitely a big conversation and what's a lot of, you know, like, just on the arena end and on the back end and the employee end, we're doing a lot of things around there, so that's part of the conversation too.
Real quick, if I can, for my last question, just follow up on that just to some extent. Talk to me about the fandom that's going on between, you know, Brooklyn and New York, between the Nets and the Knicks. that's going on right now. You know, the Knicks are going through so much stuff. Brooklyn is going through its own stuff. Mm-hmm. What's going on with the fans in the New York area right now? How are they treating each other?
Treating each other? I mean, you know, I think that the Knicks, I mean, well, you've seen the, you know, from the protests and, you know, just everything that has been going on with the Knicks over the past year. They're frustrated. I don't know if they'll come or some Knicks fans will just never be Nets fans, just, you know, based off principle. So, you know, that's always going to stay the same. But I do think that the Nets, you know, some people that are, you know, just moving to Brooklyn or, you know, like younger people that don't have they don't have a commitment, you know, to any one team are really interested in the Nets. So I feel like the fans are still split. But, you know, that Knicks frustration, they've been going. We have problems, but the Knicks problems have been here, you know, for several years before the Nets even thought about coming over here. So, you know, I think that a lot of Knicks fans, and me being, you know, a Knicks fan myself, is just, like, just so tired. Like, when will it end? You know what I mean? Oh, boy. So, yeah.
My last question is, first let me start off by saying that I am a huge LeBron James fan, and not just simply because he's an amazing basketball player, but simply because he has this capacity to juggle the media and his game at the exact same time. He's only got burned
right.
Bad time with the decision, but outside of that, he's been keeping his nose clean. So it makes me think, I go back in the past, and I'm like, well, I wonder who in the past would have the most problems with social media, be it a positive or a negative. Like my personal favorite, I think Will Chamberlain probably would have been an even bigger star due to social media because of his, you know, his list that he has. Is there anybody in the past that you think that might have had a real bad problem with social media or would have benefited a lot from social media?
I mean, maybe like Bill Russell probably would have benefited. You know, he probably would have had like, you know, another championship. He probably would have been like even bigger than he was. I mean, just, you know, the legend that he is, you know, could only get better, but he's somebody who I admire a lot. So, you know, I think that it would have been cool to follow him on Twitter or Instagram, you know, just somebody that can win so much, you know what I mean? Historically, I would have liked to see, you know, his inspirational posts and stuff like that, or, you know, his reactions to the media or whatever. Somebody who, I think in Allen Iverson's day, I think that, you know, they probably would have been Baller Alert and all of these, like, gossip websites, you know, probably would have been in his business, so that probably would have been a problem, you know, for him. I think even if it was out, he probably would have stayed away from it anyway because, you know, he was always in it for something else. So it probably would have just been worse for him if social media was, like, as prevalent as it was when he was in his prime. But that's, like, my number one, number two player anyway, so so I'm glad it wasn't.
That's a really good one. I never thought about Bill Russell and him, you know, flashing his, what 11 rings? Is that what it is?
Yeah, 11. So
yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. His Twitter account would have been straight madness. Today, he's flashing 10 digits and one pinky on top of it. So, yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Now, I gotta admit, I actually think AI back in his day would have been a great Twitter person because he would have been very active.
He would have been, but the media would have killed him. I mean, well, they already did, but, you know.
Mia Hall, NBA enthusiast, journalist, and media personality, let all of our listeners know how they can find out more about you and what you're involved with.
Okay, well, they can go to my website at blog.miahall.net, and I post most of my stories and musings there. You can also follow me on Twitter and Instagram, both at Mia_HallDaily. And on Facebook, I'm at facebook.com/Mia's Full Court Press.
Mia Hall, thank you so much for your time. Always a pleasure.
We look forward to having you back soon.
Likewise. Thank you. Look forward to being back. And look forward to seeing you in February, hopefully.
All right. Let's make it happen. Let's make it happen. Thank you again, Mia.
No problem.
Welcome back to the Section 357 show. Find us on Twitter at Section 357. Last call for alcohol or something like it. D, what do you have?
My shout out goes to the NBA and their free agency. There's still some issues, certainly, with the NBA draft, but I've got to give it to NBA free agency. They certainly did it with the decision part two. It's certainly going to be coming up with Kevin Durant. With the way that the NBA is such a star-powered league and the way that the CBA has contracts going, you're going to see a lot of star players going into free agency, and that just gives storylines going into the offseason, which keeps the NBA going into the dead time of the offseason, which, very much like the NFL, keeps the NBA going year-round. Kudos to the NBA for that.
My last call goes out to international basketball versus the NBA. And we talked about this in another show as it relates to patriotism and sports. For many other countries, playing for their national team is the highest honor. However, for most U.S. sports, the major sports, playing for your league or your club team is the highest honor. Winning an NBA championship for most players is a higher award than playing for the United States men's basketball team. So my stance is simply this. It's time to return international basketball in the U.S. back to the amateur ranks, back to the collegiate ranks. If you're only concerned about winning gold medals, then fine. Keep the pros there, playing against players who we have no idea who they are, playing uninspired basketball. But I think there's a great incentive for amateur athletes to stay in college if they knew that playing for their country was an added bonus. So I would love to see USA Basketball return back to the college players to give them an incentive to play for an extra year. And also, it would give the NBA scouts a chance to see these college ball players against different competition so that they could tell who is really ready for that next level, the highest level, which is the NBA.
All right, well, my last call is kind of based off of that, because that's very interesting, because I think we need to have a very realistic viewpoint on what that means if we let collegiate players play international games, because the competition isn't thinking the way that we're thinking regarding going for the gold or the international trophy. Our collegiate players would be competing against professional athletes. And this isn't 1992 anymore, where the level of professional basketball players on the world was close to the level of professional players in the NBA. Their guys can ball on an NBA level. So if we do go that route, I think the United States has to have a very realistic a viewpoint of knowing that gold is absolutely not guaranteed.
For our listeners out there and for those NBA / international hoops fans out there, let us know. Is winning the gold medal for the USA in basketball that important, or is it not? Basketball is a sport that we dominate around the world. So is it important for you that we win the gold medal and play for that? Or is the risk of having our NBA players playing in a meaningless, for some of them, meaningless competition with a lot of risk too much? Find us on Twitter at Section 357 and let us know your thoughts. With that being said, good luck to you and your favorite teams out there, wherever you might be. This is the Section 357 show, where we always have the best seats in the house. Until next time, take care.